Feeling lost and alone? Looking for validation from your partner, only to find the feeling of rejection and continued frustration? You're together yet so far apart. Now your frustration has turned into disdain and resentment. Your insecurities have begun to affect every aspect of your life. Ironically, you have now become the cold and detached one, shielding yourself from the uncertainties of your relationships. Dr. April Brown has created Bringing Intimacy Back, a series of discussions that are designed to help you reclaim what you have lost along the way. Dr. April will help you rediscover and reconnect to the intimate relationship your heart so desires. Go to www.bringingintimacyback.com today and let the healing begin.
Welcome to the Bringing Intimacy Back show, where intimacy is real. On this show, we help to aim you increase the intimate connections between your significant others, your loved ones, your higher power, your family, friends, business network, community. We give you the secret power to intimacy, to create a life you love, a love the life you created. Well, today, I'm honored today to have a special guest. As you know that as we're all struggling with COVID-19 and just trying to figure out, what does this all mean? What does all this mean to us? What's going on? I was just thinking about that in the sense of the meaning. And I was like, wow, you know, I really need to have someone on who's an expert in meaning. And you know what? I've been blessed to have someone that I work with very closely. His name is Dr. David Hall, and Dr. David Hall has a wonderful practice here in Southwest Florida that's called, guess what? Peace and Meaning. And he really, really, I meet with him regularly, talks about the meaning of life and how that helps us once we understand more of it and how it provides us peace. Welcome, David, Dr. David Hall.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Yeah, so let me explain a little bit about Dr. David Hall's background. So David's, I guess when he was younger, he grew up all over, up in New England, and he's a child of the 60s, which he doesn't look that way. He looks very, very young and stuff. And so but David has actually, Dr. David Hall has actually served our, by serving in the military, in the U.S. Army for our government. And so thank you for your service there. Dr. David Hall is also very, 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 very smart. And he's graduated from Gordon College, a Christian college in Massachusetts. He actually went to medical school and he is did residency in internal medicine at St. Francis Hospital. He actually worked in the emergency room for many, many years. He's also, when we talk about peace and meaning, the one thing that I like about Dr. David is that he's very resilient. Dr. David has had a few heart attacks and have survived them. And he retired some years ago from medicine, even though he enjoyed it so much, and decided to go into his first love, which is counseling, which is how I met him at a university. And he has been working alongside me since 2017. So welcome, David.
Well, thank you.
Yes.
I didn't know you had all that background on me. That's you did your homework. Very good.
Yeah, so in your own words, because I was just doing it randomly, kind of, how did you even just enter into this as we're talking about peace and meaning? We're going to talk about counseling. How did you enter into a field of introspection and looking at helping others?
Well, you know, I guess I was always a little unhappy. Maybe I was a little depressed even. And I wanted to know why. I wanted to know how to fix myself and how to help others. And that was that idea of looking at yourself and what motivates you, what keeps you going. That was something I think my parents taught me as well in their spiritual journey. So, yeah.
Yeah, so when you say you were a little depressed, was this as a doctor?
Oh, I think it was when I was in my teens, when I was a young rebel hippie, you know, this is something I sat and typed some things up last night, and I realized I marched for peace, much like people are out today marching for what's going on, what happened to George Floyd and that terrible disaster, murder that happened there. And it makes all of us, it shakes us all up. And I think the, back then it was this, the Vietnam War, and it shook me up, and I was out marching for peace, but I didn't have any peace. You know, I'm demonstrating for peace. I'm like, we need peace. We need peace. And inside I was like, I don't know. Just not happy. And trying to find my way. So.
Okay. And this was as a young 20-some-year-old student or person.
Yeah. 19, 20.
Student of life. Yeah. Student of life. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm curious, what did that look like in you? Because sometimes people don't even understand when they are depressed at that point.
I would not have called myself depressed at that time. It's only looking back at it, I realized, oh my gosh, that's what that was. But I was reading books back then. We were into, that was the 60s, and we were into introspection and reading. Everybody was reading the same books. Steppenwolf was a book based on, Indian culture, and there were other, you know, sort of introspective books that were popular then. We were reading those things, and the questions of life and meaning were central to that.
Okay. And that's what you were just really trying to focus on.
Yeah. And I wasn't getting the answers that were really fulfilling. I had interesting answers, intellectually fascinating discussions, but I couldn't say I was happy. Yeah.
Right.
But I didn't know. If you asked me if I was happy, I would have said, yeah. I wasn't.
Yes. And so as you're, because now, like you said, with all this stuff with George and that's going on with all the demonstrations, is that bringing memories for you? And
You know, we had marches and demonstrations like this, and it was a combination of those who really were committed to the ideals. Today's ideals are equality, the eradication of racism, valuing people for who they really are. And that's been a theme ever since then. We were into that then, but we also had the focus was on why do we go to war? We shouldn't have war. And today it's, we shouldn't have racism. But we had a combination of peaceful demonstration by people who were committed to the ideals. And then it was also, the movement was hijacked by violent people who wanted to use it for their political ends. And so that's what happens when people demonstrate. There are certain people who understand that you can take a movement that has good ideals, and you can camouflage your political sort of revolution desires, and you put on the camouflage. You hop into, it's almost like I want to say it's like this, like a wolf in sheep's clothing. You know, the wolf wants to attack and destroy, and it really has evil intent. And then the sheep is nice and beautiful. Well, they're not that pretty, but they're nice, and they're supposed to be helpful. And so they come in, and put on the facade of the movement, but they're really looking for their own political ends. And that's, I think, what we have now. It's the same. I saw it then. I didn't believe it then. My mother told me, oh, don't you understand? This is driven by people who have evil intent. And I said, no, I don't know anybody like that. And I didn't.
Right.
But then I found out later, oh, yeah, everything I was doing was driven by somebody else who had political names that I didn't have.
Okay. So how does a boy that, because I know from what you've shared with me, is that you left home and hitchhiked and doing these demonstrations. How does that transformation go from there to deciding to have a career to help?
Well, that was interesting. When I was hitchhiking, I was exploring the world, and when I hitchhiked across the United States, it only took about 2 months, 2.5 months. And I came back to demonstrate against the war and all that stuff. And then around that time, I'm 19 years old, the Vietnam era, and I got drafted.
Okay.
And I had to decide, am I going to go to Canada, leave the United States, you know, run away from the draft because I don't believe in war. And I ended up allowing myself to be drafted. And by that time, I had finally come to the realization that I think this Christian, this belief in Jesus was probably something useful. I kind of had an encounter, so to speak, nothing big and massive, but sort of a quiet encounter in my soul with Christ. And I, so this is as I'm getting ready to be drafted, and I started praying, and I says, well, if I'm going to be drafted, I don't want to, you know, I'd like to be a counselor. I want to help people who use drugs and alcohol. I had been into marijuana and acid and things like that. And I'm like, you know, that's what I want to do. And I prayed, and God opened the doors for that. And I was trained in counseling at that time. And I worked for about a year and a half in a drug and alcohol counseling center Fort Dix, New Jersey.
Oh, awesome. I did not know that. Okay. That's when you were training for the first time. Okay. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And then how does that lead to becoming a medical doctor?
Well, see, this was it. Now, what do? You're in the Army, and the Army has a program to treat addiction. And people, young men, come into the Army, they get into boot camp, and they go, I don't want to be here.
Right.
And some of them are drug users, and they realized, it became known, you can go for drug treatment. Okay. And they figured out that if they didn't get better, they could get a medical discharge. It was not a dishonorable discharge. It was a medical discharge. Right. So they were in the program to get out of the Army and to prove they were addicts. So nobody got better. If they got better, they'd have to go back and stay in the Army. So I got disillusioned after 18 months of talk therapy with these guys. Very few. Some of them got better, and actually one or two became pretty good friends of mine later. Most of them didn't get better, and most of them didn't get better on purpose, because staying sick got them out of the Army. And so I got disillusioned, and I said, if I'm not going to do this psychology counseling thing because it's ineffective. Well, I was being fooled. I was being tricked, and I didn't realize that. So I decided I'll go do something that really makes a difference much more efficiently, which would be medicine. So then when I had 3 heart attacks between the ages of 38 and 47. And my boss, I had a pacemaker. My boss came in one day, I was in the hospital getting my pacemaker taken care of. And she said, I don't think the stress in the E in the emergency department is helping you. I says, I think you're right. Okay. So I was able actually to retire on disability for more than a decade.
Okay. And then you fell back in love with your...
Well, I just went back to the reading and the studying. I actually went to counseling conferences, the American Association of Christian Counselors. My wife and I both were interested in this kind of thing. And even though I wasn't even thinking about becoming a counselor, I was going to the national conference. I went several times. And the more I read, the more I studied. We worked in churches with recovery groups. I read books. I went to conferences. I got my own counseling for my own issues. I did like 8 years of counseling for myself. You wouldn't know.
That's fine.
Sorry.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So I'm just curious, how did you become so, because today's topic is really about how to find peace in these times when we have the COVID, when you have, you know, racial division that's going on.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah. What has made you been able to be so resilient to bounce back? Because you've gone through a lot of this.
Yeah. There's no question that I love one of your questions that you had sent me some questions to think about. And you said, how do you feel? Use the word feeling, and you really have to, you know, belief is not an intellectual function, but belief is not something that happens in the thinking part of your brain. You have to think. You should think. You should absolutely examine in a very intelligent way what you believe. You should do that. You have to. But ultimately, the ability to get through life and be resilient depends on what you feel when you're in danger, when you anticipate difficulties, when you're in the middle of a difficulty, when you're sorrowful or hurt or depressed after a difficulty. You have to have something that gives you hope and meaning. And that comes, generally comes from, that's what faith is about. Whatever faith you have, even if you're an atheist, you have some kind of faith about existence. That's what I was in when I was 19 years old and I was somewhat depressed. I was somewhat of an atheist, agnostic at that time. And even then I know what my faith was, that I don't believe in God. I believe in some other system. And I felt things because that's what I believed. There were certain things I felt.
And David, can you explain your definition of faith as you're using that word?
That's a good idea. Faith. You know, the Bible says, there's a verse in the Bible that's pretty good. It says, faith is the substance of things hoped for. So, you know, there are things you hope for. Well, you don't have them in your hands. You know, they're in the future, but right. you can feel them the way you feel. There's a movie called Faith Like Potatoes. You can look that up from South Africa. And the guy says, you have to have faith. That's like you can pick it up, put it in your hand and hold it and feel it. And we talk about feelings as counselors. We actually examine feelings all day long. That's what we look for. That's what we're trying to sort out is feelings. And so faith, effective faith, is something that you feel, gives you hope, right. Hope and meaning.
Right, right. And having that hope provides you the meaning that will...
The meaning gives you hope. I said, that's why I put meaning, peace and meaning, right?
Right.
And that's how it comes out, it flows out that way. But it's really meaning and peace, because meaning comes first, and peace is the result of having resolution of issues that bother you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you think is the meaning of all this that's going on right now?
Well, I'm
on a visual level and then on a level globally.
Well, you know, there's we used to talk about raising consciousness, mm-hmm. about racism, about peace, about poverty, about domestic violence. The first thing you have to do, and you have to do it throughout in any campaign against any evil, you've got to keep people aware of the issue. And boy, we have all been made aware of the still, the word that comes to my mind, I'm inside me, I can feel this word, rampant. Mm. I don't think it's rampant. If you ask me intellectually, I don't think it's rampant, but it feels like rampant racism.
Mm-hmm.
My heart, in my soul, that's what I have a surge of biochemicals right now as I speak about it. This is awful. When I saw George Floyd dying, I'm like, are you kidding me? I can't believe this still happens in this country. And it's awful. Right now, I'm feeling it. It's
right, right.
And that, so seeing that everyone is reacting like this, and this is good that we react like this. It's terrible that it happened. It's mm-hmm. wonderful that we're all in agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And because we've seen it, we will hate it, and we will fight it with everything in us. And that's what's going on. That's what people feel when they're out demonstrating and somebody is violent and people go, yes, that's how I feel. Well, the violence isn't driven. I don't think the violence is driven as much by that adrenaline that we feel when we see that. The adrenaline helps it, but it's initiated and it's carried out for political reasons. It's an attempt to disrupt the society. The violence, you know, the looting. I saw a video last night, I think it was last night, some woman outside of her store, and she's yelling at whoever ransacked her store. And she says, you know, this isn't, this, we're trying to build this community and you're tearing it down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this woman is so eloquent in her rage at this kid who's helped to destroy his own community. Although, you know, who knows if it's his community or somebody else's, but.
Right. And I think sometimes people, like that rampant, you said, is what we're feeling. And yeah. for some of us who are destroying things, a lot of them are very young and they don't know what to do.
Yeah, that's me. That's when I was 19. I was, you know, I didn't throw things, but I yelled unkind words at people. but you know, like, I don't think I ever called a policeman a pig. I sometimes thought that way, but I never said it out loud. But that's what they used to say: the cops are pigs, and they're not. Mm-hmm. Well, most of them are. Some of them are.
Right. But, definitely.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, it's scary and it's hurtful. But like you said, now that we're seeing it, and I think like you said, it's rampant, it's bleeding out. It's bleeding out of our souls.
Yeah, and we're unified. That's the positive. You ask me what's the positive or what good comes out. You know, the positive comes out is there's a renewed emotional, strong agreement that we're not gonna put up with this. We cannot put up with this. Right, it definitely cannot continue to exist in this society. Cannot.
Right, right. And so we're going to take a short break. But when we come back, I want to go more on an individual basis of this peace and meaning, because there is a lot of us that are suffering out there that have, like you said, this stuff going on inside. And I know you're the one to give us some suggestions and tips. So when we come back, we're going to hear more about Dr. David Hall about peace and meaning.
During this difficult time that we are all facing, many people are in need of someone to talk to. One option is speaking to a therapist to express your anxieties if you are feeling isolated or just need someone that will listen and help you with coping skills to get through. Dr. April Brown is now accepting new clients and is working with her existing clients through distance video counseling. The services are through a secure online HIPAA web-based practice management platform called Simple Practice. This technology can provide a secure two-way interactive video counseling session over the internet. For more information about video counseling, please email Dr. April Brown at info@draprilbrown.com, or you may call 239-565-6921. Thank you. And remember, we are all in this together.
Okay. Welcome back to the Bringing Intimacy Show, where intimacy is real. If anyone's out there listening and they want to ask Dr. David Hall a question, feel free to call in. We're taking call-ins. The number is 888-627-6008. So Dr. David, we were just talking about all the stuff that's happening out there and how you just explained to us that meaning comes first. Once we have a meaning, then we can have peace. I want to first start about the stress that goes on inside. What causes that stress?
You know, I think stress is really, I'm coming to see this over and over again, that my clients' unhappiness or emotional pain comes, I think, from not understanding who they are and why they're here. Mm. This is meaning. You know, who am I really? And people live their lives with thoughts about themselves, feelings that I'm not good enough, I can't do anything right. Some they can be the opposite of that. They can be arrogant, which is really covering up for those feelings. And if they're arrogant, they're going to have terrible relationships. And it's still caused by the underlying belief they're covering up, which is, they're saying I'm good enough, and that's a defense to say, to cover up, I'm not good enough. And so they can't get down. It's a matter of uncovering the unhappy beliefs about who we are and how we fit into the world. And so it comes out as depression, anxiety, disturbed relationships.
So it's like, and I know we talked earlier, it's that those messages we get about ourselves, whether it's from dysfunctional families or things that happened to us that maybe we didn't do well in. And we end up believing those messages somewhat, but then we feel like this isn't us. And then we have this, we're not being authentic.
Yes. Authenticity. Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah.
I didn't think of this before, but in social messaging, what do you call it?
Social media kind of stuff?
Social media, thank you. Yes, Facebook and all that, and texting.
Right.
We'll set up kind of false identities even. Mm-hmm. We may use our real name and our real face, but we pretend we present ourselves the way we want to be seen, which is not authentic.
Right.
And we do it in order to win the approval that and the acceptance that we hunger for.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with that is we put up a false face and people accept the false face, but I'm behind that false face. And I realize I never come to terms with it in my mind, but because they love the false face, they accept that false face. I know it's false and I know I'm still not good enough. They're okay. They accept me. They let me hang out with them. But I'm still me and I'm still not adequate and I got to keep putting up the false face. That's very stressful. That's stress. Working on presenting myself a way that I wish I was and not being feeling safe with and accepted with the way I really am.
Right. And for some of us with the COVID-19, we've had more time to just be inside ourselves.
Yeah, that's one thing. Where you're going with this.
Yeah, that's one thing. And yeah. Then for some of us, we're not appreciated. Once we move outside of our house, people judge us or think we're such and such, you know, by the color of our skin or whatever the case may be. So we're like, where is the peace?
How many times have you had, I'm going to ask you, because have you had a client who was convinced that somebody like a boss didn't think they were very good, and only to find out the boss loves them and think they're great, and they don't get it.
Right, exactly. That's
how, it happens all the time. You think you're being judged, and you're not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and sometimes you are being judged, and it's not fair. And so you need to become a counselor can help you to come to terms with that and realize, you know, that's not your problem. That's their problem. They don't get it. They don't understand.
Right. Right. And exactly. I'm glad you point that out, that sometimes you are being judged and it's not right. And you do have to figure out what's good for you. You know what I'm saying? How to be yourself and not care about what other people think.
Yes. Well, see, that comes here. Okay. This is great. Because we're going to talk in a few minutes about another technique. But this really addresses that. What happens, say somebody says, boy, you're dumb. You're stupid. Somebody says to me, I'm stupid. Well, I had a 4.0 grade point average in college. I went to med school. I did okay. I'm not all that dumb. And somebody says to me, Dave, that was really dumb. I believe them. I always believe them 100% of the time because I feel dumb.
Right.
I do feel stupid. And so I feel stupid. Somebody says I'm stupid because I already believe the lie.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that. I feel what I believe. I believe I'm stupid. I'm not stupid. I can prove it on paper that I'm not stupid all day long. But I feel stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And so when somebody says, you dummy, I go, yeah, you're right. I laugh it off. That's my resiliency. But I feel it. I feel stupid. And if I had that cured, if I had a good counselor, so Dr. April, I need to see you. I had a good counselor help me to come to terms, and this technique we're going to talk about in a few minutes actually cures that. I should go and get that taken care of. But because it's what their criticism, their perceived criticism, whether it's real or fake, it doesn't matter. Their criticism triggers my core belief.
Mm-hmm.
It's not what they said that hurts me.
Right.
It's my core belief that hurts me.
Right. So taking that scenario, which has happened to me, I used to always think I was poor comprehension skills or whatever, because a former teacher when I was younger told me that. And then
for what school?
A former teacher, a third grade teacher.
Told you what?
That I couldn't comprehend.
Couldn't comprehend.
So it's always in my back of my mind has always popped up. Even in the sense of, you know, do I go get my master's? No, I can't comprehend. Even after I got my master's, do I go get my doctorate? No, I can't comprehend. So I'm curious because she says you have a technique. What technique can help individuals who are stuck? Because thoughts like that can keep you stuck.
Absolutely. Yeah. So there's the technique is called Transformation Prayer Ministry. So it's transformation because we change from one state to another. And from one condition to another condition. What happens is we have a core belief. We discover, we don't even know we have these core beliefs most of the time.
Right.
We discover what our core beliefs are, the ones that hurt us.
Okay.
And then they're changed. They're made the opposite. Or they're resolved. The word resolution. We make peace. Peace, emotional peace comes in because we discover the meaning that, okay, I'm not stupid, or it's not true that I don't comprehend. Mm-hmm. And it's shown to us in a way that is not intellectual. It's not a matter of being intellectually convinced that that's a lie. There's an emotional, personal connection that's made that convinces us, as it's an experience that changes our mind. We need experience to change our mind. Thought won't change our mind. We need an experience that changes us, and it provides that kind of experience. Do you want an example? I'll give you an example.
Yes.
So I have a friend who grew up in Cleveland in the mafia. And he was a tough guy, and he went out and got in fights, and he saw a lot of violence, and he always carried a gun and a knife his whole life. And later he became a pastor, a Christian pastor, you know, who preached in churches and helped run Christian organizations, and was successful. And he was still carrying a knife everywhere he went since he was a kid, like 13. And he went through a series of transformational prayer. Well, if you walked up behind him and tapped him on the shoulder, he'd come around with a fist, and he'd have to stop himself because he would hurt you.
Right.
Just he doesn't know. Nobody comes up behind this guy and touches him. And he carries a knife, and when he goes in a restaurant, he sits in the back corner. No other seat will do because he's got to see everything that's going on in the room. So there's a defensive posture constant that everybody's a threat, and I have to always watch my back, and I always have to be ready to fight. He did transformation prayer over many different circumstances. And one day he went to reach for his knife to put in his pocket, and he said, I don't need that. Then there was a time later when I reached in, we were praying together over somebody. I reached in and put my hand on his shoulder from behind, and he didn't see me coming. And I purposefully did that, and I felt for a twitch of muscle. Would he react spontaneously with his shoulder, getting ready to defend himself? Because in the past, he would have. And that's gone, completely gone. And he doesn't have to sit in the back corner of a restaurant. All this defensive posture, all this fear of, I've got to watch out, somebody's out to get me, completely gone. And that doesn't go away. No therapy makes that go away. Other than this, this is the only therapy I know that would make all that go away.
So you have to create a positive experience.
Yeah.
Okay.
Only experience, our beliefs are only changed by experience. We learn them through experience, and they're only changed by experience. Intellectual argument doesn't change what you believe. You can argue theology or politics all day long. Mm-hmm. When you see George Floyd die, you're changed. That right. changed us. That changed right. the entire country.
Right. Right. And for some people, when they see that and they see a lot of the police brutality, and that's all they've experienced.
Oh.
That's all they see. You know what I'm saying? And so
predominantly, it's rare. Certain people will have very little experience. Well, I grew up in this little town in New Hampshire. We would go down 11 o'clock at night as young teenagers, 16, 18 years old. We'd go down and look for the town cop, and we'd hang out and talk with them. Right. I learned to like the police, but right. I learned to not like them from things I saw as I hitchhiked across the country and as I've seen police brutality, and I've seen police with terrible attitudes toward me. I'm a white guy, and I'm a middle class, you know, upstanding citizen to look at, I think. And
yeah,
and they're still pretty nasty sometimes. And it's like, this uncalled for. There's no need for that.
Right.
And so it's a variety of experiences. But if you're a congressman from South Carolina, do you remember his name? You're from South Carolina.
Yeah, I know. I'm from South Carolina. Yes. Yeah.
What's his name? Scott? Tom? Tim Scott? Tim Scott. And he's been stopped several times in Washington, D.C. He's a congressman. Right. And he stopped because he's black.
Right.
It's like,
right. This. It's happened to me.
I'm sure it has. And it's like, yeah. And the attitude when they stop, it's like, we don't need this.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But like you're saying, it's helping to create some positive experiences, whether that's.
Well, this is because it's prayer. It's an experience of your soul in the environment of prayer, where you're actually having conversation with someone.
Okay.
We'll get into that later.
So as people are out there listening and they're dealing with the stress, how can they create these positive relationship or these positive experiences?
Well, that, you know, with transformational prayer, you need someone who's well trained and experienced with it. You really do, because there's a lot of places where people get stuck, and it's getting out of the unstuck place. And the biggest thing, you really have to be authentic. You can't use your normal defenses. Telling yourself what you want to believe, what you wish you believed, it really doesn't help. If it worked, you wouldn't be here talking to me. You know,
if
what you tell yourself when you're under stress worked, you wouldn't be here talking to a counselor. It didn't work.
Right, exactly.
Let's do something different. Let's not do the same thing we used to do. Let's do something different. And that means you got to drop your defenses.
Yeah, which is hard, especially
you need help with that. You need to know you're safe, that you're trusted, that you're respected, that you're loved, that you're in a good place where nobody's going to attack you or judge you. You really, really need that. And that's a counselor's office. Hopefully you have it in churches, but you don't really. It doesn't seem like that.
Okay, it doesn't seem like it's...
Non-judgmental in churches? Are you kidding me? Have you been to my church? I got a pretty good church. We're not too judgmental, but it's still out there.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I think some people don't realize, as you say, in therapy and in counseling, there is no judgment.
Oh no, yeah.
Yeah, and that's one of the big differences about that.
Well, my clients in the first year or two of counseling, a lot of times I'd get young men coming in, and sometimes women explaining what they did. They're being honest and vulnerable and authentic. And they said, well, I did this, this, and this. And they're apologizing all over the place and explaining. I said, I want you to understand something. I don't care what you tell me. I'm not going to judge you. I'm not going to think less of you. I'm not going to lose my respect for you because you did these things. You don't have to justify yourself. Just tell me what happened.
Right, definitely.
Yeah.
Yes. All right, but we're going to take a short break. And in this break, I want you to, Dr. David, just tell us more about your services. And especially because people are out there wondering, can this treatment also be done virtually? So if you could let us know that. Yes. Go ahead. Take it away.
Oh, you wanted to start now? I thought we were going to take a break.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Okay.
I do. I do online counseling only these days because of Corona-19, and I'm at risk because I'm diabetic, heart disease, old guy, fat. I'm not going to be sitting in a room with somebody breathing their air for an hour and a half. I do provide 90-minute sessions. Most people do 60-minute sessions. I charge like 120, that's a standard rate, for 90 minutes. Most people charge that for 60 minutes. I do that online. You can reach me at 941-444-0447. Lots of fours. And my website is peaceandmeaning.com.
What do you specialize?
Sorry?
What do you specialize in?
Depression, anxiety. I do a number of couples, and I'm very, very interested in couples work. I've been using a little bit emotionally focused therapy, and but the more I see of it, the more I realize that. Well, I don't know how much time do you have in this segment? Because I think that the difficulty in relationships stem from the inner conflicts that each person has. You know, it's their insecurity or their arrogance, which is covering their insecurity, that interferes in their relationship. It's what's wrong with me that creates the problem in us. And it's true for each of the people in there's always a contribution from both people. And it's the insecurity, the fears, and that each of us carry that interferes in our relationships.
Right, definitely. Okay. Yes. So now, as we enter our last segment, I would like for you to give us some tools on how to reduce stress, because some people, even in the sense of depression, have to, they're so down on themselves that even to make a phone call to a therapist, they're not there yet because they don't even know that they're worth the call to make to a therapist. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. So what are some techniques?
Well, you know, I was going to run through a little, just a little mindfulness exercise. Do you want me to run this? Like if people are listening, they can join us and we can do this for about 3 minutes or something. And, second, I gotta get rid of some noise on the outside. So if you sit and just close your eyes, get comfortable, and I'm gonna explain some of this as we do it, how it works and why it works. So sit and be comfortable. Many people have done this. I'm surprised if anybody's listening and hasn't done this, I'd be surprised. But everybody's done this at some point. And take a deep breath. And you take your breath in to a count of three. So when you breathe in, it's one, two, three, all the way to the top of your shoulders. Breathe out, two, three, four, five. And then in, one, two, three, out, two, three, four, five. That rhythm actually slows the brain waves when your eyes are open and you're talking and dealing with the world around you. Your brain is operating at a rate of about 12 to 16 cycles per second. And when you do this breathing with your eyes closed, your brain slows down to what's called beta waves, which is 8 to 12 per second. It's like turning down the volume on your thinking and turning up the volume on your feelings, on physical feeling, awareness of your surroundings. That's why it's called mindfulness. You're actually turning on a part of the brain, you're turning up the volume in a part of the brain that senses what you feel. So as you do that, you feel your lungs fill, feel yourself relax as you breathe out. Every time you breathe out, you just relax. And you start to sense how heavy you are, your weight in the chair, the warmth of where you're sitting, the sounds around you, maybe a breeze on your skin. And then turn inward and feel your emotions, feel whatever you have in your soul that we ask the question when we're doing transformation prayer, we say, what do you feel, anything you feel that's not peace and calm? A lot of people find peace and calm when they just relax like this. And once you have that sense of quieting, you look for, you know, what is bothering me? And that's where you begin your work of resolving things. But don't go that far. Just go to the relaxed place. That's enough time with that for now. But, you know, if you did that for 10 minutes, you would feel like you had a half hour nap. It's beautiful. I just did that probably before we started this broadcast. I'd spent 10 minutes doing that, and fantastic. It's great.
Yeah, it does calm your mind down. Things don't go as fast. Yeah. Like you said, I feel being in the present moment.
Yep. And I've trained myself. I did something called neuro-linguistic programming, which I can do with patients as well. And I've trained myself to take an 8-minute nap or a 10-minute nap. And I wake up and I'm good for 3 hours. It's fantastic. So that's one way to deal with stress. I think when we talk about stress, I said don't take on any new stress. Stop doing everything everybody asks you to do. Learn to say no. Deal with your codependency. You don't have to fix everything. So stop it. That's number one. Number two, walk away. Learn how to walk away from the stress for 10 minutes. If you are an hour or 3 hours or half a day, learn how to take time. We call it self-care and counseling. Mm-hmm. Learn how to escape. Go ahead and escape. Play a game. Read a book. Listen to a music. Mm-hmm. Talk to a friend. One of the biggest, I'm a talker. You may be able to tell that. And talking to friends. You know, right.
Yeah, I like how you said also to step away, because as you know, when working with couples, many times, and as you said, they have internal conflicts going on.
Yeah.
Of course. And sometimes when stress happens and they start to get in a disagreement, you know, whether they're triggered from the past or whatever, it just becomes very emotional and very intense and chaotic. And they get many times, as we call it, flooded up here.
Yeah.
Yes. Can you maybe elaborate more on that and how what you just did, how that helps calm people?
Elaborate on what calms people when they're flooded?
Yes.
How to deal with that?
Yes.
Well, you know, that's what TPM, transformational prayer, is made for flooding. That's exactly what it's made for. If you can discover, if you realize you're being flooded, you figure out what triggered that flood, and you go ahead and have that, you treat that with, need somebody trained to help you with that. But if you're by yourself and you're not trained in TPM, when you're flooded, you just, that old thing of taking the count to 10, well, that's not adequate, because the flooding's not going to go away in 10 seconds. But, you know, turn your attention somewhere else and call a friend. You know, that's where you do need to walk away. And there are rules for that in couples therapy. I'm sure you talk with your couples about that. You know, you agree to come back and deal with the issue later, but come back with a cooler head.
Mm-hmm.
But, recognizing that you're flooded is huge, because that's...
Yeah, and what happens to...
Yeah.
Can you explain what happens to the brain? Because even in the sense of the couples I was just thinking about, but also in the sense of the riots... Sometimes it's people.
Just Yeah. There was a news guy, and he asked the guy, "What are you here for?" And the guy went off, and it was like, "I'm the guy who went off." I'm like, "I'm with him." I'm like, "Yeah, that's right." You would be. I am upset at the same things he's upset at, but he's flooded, you know. And I need to not be flooded. I need to use a calm, cool, smart, wise approach. The flooding is useful because it gets us moving. So we don't sit there and put up with crap that shouldn't happen. That's useful. It's meant for that purpose. But if it's left without calm, wise consideration, then it creates destruction and is counterproductive, and you don't get what you need. And so it's this combination of the two that you need. But what to do, what to recognize when you're flooded. There's a program on TV called Impossible Dog, Dog Impossible. It shows a dog who gets flooded. He gets triggered and he can't control himself. And this guy trains dogs on how to stop flooding. And the main thing is he says the first thing you have to do is break their focus away from the thing, the trigger that's flooding them. Just breaking the focus. If you can't break that focus, you can't stop the flooding. So you have to know when you're flooded and you have to recognize it and take an emergency step and figure out what you're going to do with that. And that you have to turn your attention elsewhere. You talked about Bible verses. You mentioned that before not in the show, but in another discussion. And Bible verses can help you with that. But so can wise sayings from your parents, from your grandpa. I mean, if you've got a, this isn't going to do any good. I've got to get a hold of this. If you can't break the flooding, you need to go to a therapist and get some help. I would recommend transformation prayer for that. But there's all kinds of therapy that helps.
Right, definitely. But I like how you said it's distracting yourself. So even if it means the Bible verses are good, but even if it means just going to listen to music or something to distract.
Yeah, I think you can negotiate, because if you turn your focus somewhere else, there's a feeling of giving up, I think. For me, it's like, this needs to be fixed. This is wrong. I'm not going to turn away from this. And I think you need to have a certain degree of resilience, trust, and this is where faith comes in, I think. You know, God will help me with this. God is going to take care of this. God, he wants me to do something with him.
Right.
But I'm not any good the way I am, so I need to turn to him, and I need to trust him. And I need to trust that I can break my focus here and come back to it later with a calmer mind and do much better than what I'm going to do if I just let this go.
Right. Because sometimes later you can see it from you can see a new perspective.
Well, that's where friends come in. It's so critical to have friends.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And to be able to talk about and to be authentic.
Mm-hmm.
To say, I don't know what to do.
And when you're flooded, you have no peace.
Oh no. But I've got to say, sometimes people do brilliant things when they're flooded, but it takes a lot of wisdom to be able to do that. Now, the woman, this woman, she's out in front of the store. I think she's sweeping or she's out there talking, yelling at somebody like, you're destroying this community. We're trying to build it up. You know, mm-hmm. And she's very angry. I wouldn't say she's totally flooded, but she's got a lot. But she's doing a brilliant job. She's very wise. She's being very effective. That video, I don't know how to find that video, but if some people hopefully will see that and know what I'm talking about. But to be able to state your case with power takes a little bit of flooding.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
maybe a little bit, but maybe it's how can I put it? She's
controlled flooding.
Controlled, yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, she's learned her limitations.
Yeah, and she has passion. You know, it's brilliant things, just beautiful things you said when people are really upset if they have wisdom and passion combined. Mm-hmm. And that's that getting that together takes a lot of personal thought and a lot of work. So.
Okay. Well, Dr. David Hall, thank you so much for all the wisdom. That you provided. Yes. Was there anything that you really wanted to say that you didn't get a chance to state?
I am so glad we get to talk about George Floyd. I just think that's even more of a define. That's socially, that's the most important thing in our culture. COVID-19 is mm-hmm. Very important. We're doing a pretty good job of that. I just drove from Florida to New Hampshire. I went through a dozen states. Everybody has every state's a little different in how they're addressing it. And people are together. People are not upset. People are dealing with it. We've got it under our belt. We're still dealing with it. It's still a challenge. All the controversy, political controversy and social controversy over it. That'll all settle out. It's not a big, you know, it'll work itself out. We will learn about it. But what happened to Mr. Floyd is just heartbreaking.
Right. I think it would be, how can I put it? Us being united, it's going to be a little bit more challenging than with COVID-19.
And I heard one guy says, you know, we really do need to learn how to love each other. You know, social policy and law is one thing, but loving each other is far more powerful.
Right. And even with COVID-19, that impacted globally. It's a global thing.
Right.
But in many cases,
racism is not unique to this country. I've been to a lot of countries where there's plenty of racism, and in Europe and Asia, and it's not always toward people from Africa. It's also toward other tribes, one Asian group that doesn't like another Asian group, or a European group that doesn't like another European group, and I see it worse in other countries in terms of in discussion. It comes up in discussion, the disdain for other groups. And I don't hear it in among the people I know in this country, I don't hear that discussion. Mm-hmm. So I think we are learning, but I can't, and that's why it's so painful to see what happened, because I thought we were better than this, and we're not.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's something we still have to work on all the way through. And I do think that, it'd be great if globally we could address a lot of these issues.
Yeah.
Because we're all people. We're all human.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dr. Brown, we're not just people.
We're family.
We're all connected.
We're all connected. Yeah, we're all connected. I mean, that's exactly. So, yes. And I thank you so much for our connection here. Can you go again, state how people can find you?
Sure. My phone is 941-444-0447. And my website is peaceandmeaning.com. And give me a buzz. Give me a call. Drop me in. All right.
All right. Thank you so much, Dr. David Hall, for being on the Bringing Intimacy Back show.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.